You're listening right now to Gunther Schuller's Dreamscape, a piece commissioned by the Boston Symphony Orchestra on the 75th anniversary of Tanglewood. Schuller was one of the most important composers of the 20th century. He died yesterday at the age of 89.
Schuller coined the term third stream to describe the rich genre where jazz and classical music meet. He won the Pulitzer Prize, was artistic director at Tanglewood, and transformed the New England Conservatory, where he was president from 1967 to 1977.
All of which flowed from a mind that was largely self-taught. Schuller once described himself as, quote, a high school dropout without a single earned degree. Here he is late last year speaking to WBUR's Christopher Lydon on Radio Open Source.
I never had a teacher. My teaching was scores and hearing the music and analyzing it and studying it that way. The other teacher was playing in a great orchestra. Because when I played for those 15 years in the Metropolitan Opera, I tell you, until you hear music inside of an orchestra, I could even feel the vibrations on the floor of the pit. I mean, that is an experience you cannot have any other way. In other words, to be surrounded by this world of music in such an intimate way.
Well, joining us now to talk about Gunther Schuller and his contribution to music is Jan Swofford. He's a Boston-based composer and musicologist who writes about music for Slate. Jan, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Megan.
Also with us today is Eric Hewitt. He's chair of the Woodwinds Department at Boston Conservatory and a close friend of Gunther Schuller's. Eric, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
Well, gentlemen, let me just first start by reading one quick quotation that appeared in the Boston Globe today. It's from pianist Russell Sherman, who described Schuller as the center of musical activity in Boston. He said, we were all his satellites and he was the sun. Jan Swofford, is that a pretty accurate way of describing Gunther Schuller's import to Boston and music?
He was exactly that, and he was for a long time. When I was in college in the 60s in Boston, Gunther was a regular. We were aware of everything Gunther was doing, and I think Boston was aware of it since then to this week, and he was just part of the normal conversation. And a story that I'll be telling the rest of my life, I didn't know Gunther well. I'd spoken to him as part of a group here and there in the last few years. But about 3 months ago, he wanted to consult with me about, he knew about my books, and he wanted to consult with me about a Brahms project that he was very much involved with, I'm sure, until practically the day he died. And so I got a phone call and picked it up, and the voice just said, this is Gunther. And he knew I was Gunther. I knew who it was, and because there was only one Gunther, and that's who he was for about 40 or 50 years in Boston.
Well, Eric, I mean, Gunther Schuller was a mentor to you. Can you just tell us a little bit more about him, about the man, what he was like?
Sure. Hello, Jan.
Hi, Eric.
Gunther was an incredibly generous human being in spirit.
Yeah.
And one of the things that gets overlooked because of his incredible and almost inhuman capability to be productive as an artist and a professional is that Gunther gave his gains in his life to his colleagues and students to support their music in recording, in publishing, in public performance. Gunther's record catalog from GM Recordings and also his publications from both Margun and Gunmar, which are now folded publishing houses, are hugely important contributions. Gunther cared about music that few other people thought was important.
Uh-huh.
And he did that for thousands of us. And he brought us to the world stage because he believed in us, and he believed in this path that he had set us all on.
Well, do you think that that's one of the reasons why, I mean, even though obviously for people who know classical music, they know who Gunther Schuller is, Boston knows, but, you know, go anywhere else in the world, you can say Copland, right? You can say any other names. And can you say Schuller and have people know instantaneously?
I think that if you're on the streets of Europe in any of the cities that have major orchestras, his name is as recognizable as it is in the major American cities around orchestras today.
Partly because he conducted so much. He
right.
conducted all over the world, and he was so involved with the music of other people like Charles Ives. He was an editor and conductor and in effect promoter of Charles Ives starting again in the 60s. I went to his performance in 1967, I think, of the first time the Boston Symphony played Ives' Fourth with him on the podium.
Mm. Well, let's listen to a little bit more of Schuller's music itself. This is the piece that won him the Pulitzer Prize for Music in 1994. It's of Reminiscences and Reflections. Let's listen. Now, Eric, people can't see what I can see in your face here. Your eyes are closed. Your head was swaying. It's as if just hearing a couple bars and you're transformed transported.
Well, Gunther's music is immediately recognizable, and there are technical and spiritual reasons for that recognizability.
So tell me why.
Well, this is a very special piece of Gunther's. It came after a long hiatus in his composition after the death of his wife, Marjorie. He hadn't written a note for quite a long time, more than a year, which is an astronomical amount of time for Gunther to not compose. And that opening is the grief of the loss of his beloved. I mean, that's what that sound is. And so if you knew what Margie meant to Gunther and how they sort of functioned as a single symbiotic organism, the feelings are immediately palpable. I mean, I have goosebumps, not because I'm hearing of Reminiscences and Reflections, but I've heard it many, many times. But I have the goosebumps because I'm feeling the same feelings now that he probably felt about Margie, and they're not of the same order or magnitude, but loss is palpable in that music. As well, the technical reasons for why Gunther's music is so discernible, so easily identifiable, is that he composed since about 1978, all of the music he wrote was with a single 12-tone row. Now, this is a technical term for musicians, but what it means is that the 12 chromatic pitches of our scale are ordered in a particular fashion. And he created a row he called the magic row. And this magic row inferred many of the rules about the way harmony and melody work in our inherited European tradition. And so any of Gunther's works, they carry this sonic icon, this stamp that is, you can't miss it.
Yeah.
It goes yet up. I'm sorry, Jan, go right ahead.
Sorry, there's something else I want to add to that, which is that a lot of people consider 12-tone music to be intellectual, but as we've just heard and what Eric said, that his music was always musical, always expressive. And Gunther was in anguish for a long time about the failure of a lot of contemporary music to catch on with the public. And I think part of his goal personally was to write music with modern technique that nonetheless expressed very human ideas, and at the same time was very much involved with jazz, and to a degree even with popular music. He was interested in everything. He was a kind of odd combination of a snob in some respects and an anti-snob in other respects.
Yeah, I mean, he would win.
The music was voluminous. He was interested in everything.
Gunther would certainly win a trivia night about Frank Zappa. He would win a trivia night about Sammy Davis Jr. and Frank Sinatra. And he would win a trivia night about Furt Wongler and about Toscanini. And he would win it about Rubinstein and Horowitz. I mean, there was no corner of our musical universe that Gunther had not investigated thoroughly.
Wow. So from the stages of La Scala to Don't Eat the Yellow Snow, he covered it all.
To Weasels Rip My Flesh, the whole thing.
We have to talk about, I mean, so this marriage of like intellect and humanism, and as Jan, as you said, jazz. I mean, we have to talk for a second about Gunther Schuller and Third Stream, this idea that basically he championed that classical and jazz have this rich ground that they share. We've got a little tape of Schuller himself speaking about this. So if I can just get his voice in here a little bit, because he talked to WBUR's Andrea Shea about one night when he was listening to the radio as a young boy, and he heard something that really stayed with him.
I said to my father, you know, Pop, I heard some music, Duke Ellington, last night, and, you know, that music is as great as Beethoven's and Mozart's. And he almost had a heart attack, because that was a heretical thing to say.
Well, so then, of course, in 1957, at Brandeis University, Schuller coined the term third stream to describe this genre of where classical meets jazz. And here he is talking about that.
it wasn't controversial to me. It was totally logical. And in fact, I said, my God, these two great musics, and they are in separate camps. They don't talk to each other. They hate each other. They vilify each other. We've got to get these musics together.
Okay, so let's listen to Schuller's work itself that really epitomizes this. This is a 1960 composition, Variants on a Theme of Thelonious Monk. So, Jan Swofford, what are we hearing here?
He has got Monk's fragmented quality. When I first heard Monk, I said he's playing with his elbows, and it has that kind of quirkiness and fragmentation of Monk's style, absolutely. Remember, Schuller, in his early days, was playing horn and with John Coltrane, and there's a Monk tune. With Coltrane and with Miles Davis, he was not just a ear for jazz, he was a performer.
Right. So, Eric, I mean, we've just got a couple seconds to go here. We could talk forever about Schuller's impact on the world of music, but what will you most remember him for?
I'll remember his... You know, it's funny. A lot of people might not remember Gunther for his just chasm of kindness that he was, like the Grand Canyon of kindness. And the generosity. These things are more spiritual than they are anything else. Gunther was unyielding, and he wanted us all to be our perfect artistic selves, and that was the unyielding mission for him. It wasn't about activity; it was about development. And so, each time you came to a project with Gunther, it was finding a way to make it as special or more special than the time before. He wasn't always friendly in his manner to get these sorts of important and historical results, but those of us who knew him closely just know what a selfless and generous human being he was, his generous musical spirit, and just his open invitation for musics from around the world and of every culture.
Well, Eric Hewitt is chair of the Woodwinds Department at the Boston Conservatory, helping us today remember Gunther Schuller. Eric, thank you so very much.
My pleasure.
And Jan Swofford, Boston-based composer and musicologist who writes for Slate. Jan, thank you as well.
Thank you, Magna. I'm glad you did this.
Well, we're delighted to as well. And we have to note, we should note that there's a memorial concert in honor of Gunther Schuller planned for November at New England Conservatory, an institution which he helped transform in the late 1960s and early 70s. And we'll go out with one more piece of Schuller's music. This is Seven Studies on Themes of Paul Klee. This is part four, The Twittering Machine.
And stay with us. A lot more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.